Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn, Rod Davis, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn, my man CJ Vogel over here. See, I gotta get right. Boom, there you go. CJ Vogel right there. My man Jerry Hamilton, of course, is joining us. Coach Shipley, he's got some personal business to attend to, but Coach Shipley will be back. Everything's fine. But Coach Shipley will be back on Thursday, but Jerry Hamilton sitting in. So we are blessed and pleased to have Jerry here. Jerry, we appreciate the time. We know you've been working really hard. We'll get some recruiting nuggets in, especially since we got Jerry here. We'll talk recruiting. Obviously, my man CJ Vogel is always in the know when it comes to recruiting. All of your questions, throw them out there. Super chats, jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. ESPN has their FPI, their Football Power Index out there. We'll discuss that. We'll start off the show talking about their Football Power Index ranking for the 2024 season. Yes, I did see that. RIP to Larry Allen. Yeah, we're a football show, so one of the greatest football players in the history of the game. RIP to a great, to a GOAT. We appreciate that love. And yeah, man, please keep sending us all of your questions or comments. We'll try to get to as many of those questions as we can. But folks, hey, checking in from Jersey Village. Hook them.
We got to talk about that, Rod. Who Jersey Village, that is Selvin Young.
Yeah.
Gerald Hansen, part of the number one recruiting class in the country when you came out.
Yeah, my man Mighty. Mighty Hansen, they should call him. Yeah. Back in the day, yeah, that's man. Jerry's got a good memory, even better than mine. I came in with some of those guys. You're right about that. All right, well, please keep getting us the shout outs from everywhere you guys are joining us from. Really appreciate those, and thank you guys for joining us. You're the most important part of this thing. All right, gentlemen, let's start with the FPI, the Football Power Index. ESPN came out with their FPI. I don't know, probably about a couple of hours ago. Actually, it dropped. And the Longhorns, as you can see, number three on the Football Power Index, only behind Georgia at number one and the Oregon Ducks at number two, ahead of Ohio State, who a lot of people believe maybe the most talented team in the country. What are your thoughts, guys? Just kind of looking at the FPI. We'll go into some of the details of it here in just a second. But your initial thoughts, Longhorns at number three in the Football Power Index.
I like Georgia where they're ranked. I think they have – people could argue Ohio State as talented of a roster, but, nah, I don't know. Georgia's had, four straight top three recruiting classes, top two, number ones, whatever. They clearly think Georgia will win in Austin, and they clearly think Oregon will beat Ohio State in Oregon a little bit on these FPIs. I know that doesn't factor into it, but – that's kind of what is interesting is I think, you know, that Georgia at Texas, Ohio State at Oregon. The thing I noticed initially with these four teams is they play each other this year in conference play.
Yeah, you're right.
I always love this part of the offseason because when ESPN's FPI rankings come out, fans who may not be in the know about what this actually is, it's outrage, right? Oh, Penn State's number six. Are you sure? Have you seen the quarterback? Why is Oklahoma? Where's Michigan? Right? You know, it's always one of these very fun outrages. It's a fun talking point, of course. I like where Texas sits at number three. I think that they address the portal needs very well this offseason. They come into the season, of course, veteran offensive line, veteran quarterback, very important going into the SEC, and that's weighed in as well. I know the FPI values in personnel. They do, last three or four years of recruiting on roster as well, factoring in whether it be the composite or the individual rankings of team recruiting classes. So there's a lot that goes into this. Of course, it's all computer generated. It's all algorithmic. So for Texas to be at number three, they see some value there. I have no issues with Georgia at one. And also, I think if we were to go back to what this ranking was prior to the post-spring, early summer rankings that we're looking at now, I don't know if Oregon would have been number two. That's pretty interesting. But they did some really, really good work in the portal in the spring session. And to see them at number two going into the Big Ten, hey, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing, Rod, is it's pretty much make or break year for James Franklin at Penn State. I mean, it really is, right? I mean, Michigan wins a national championship. Harbaugh moves on. He's got the best quarterback probably talent he's had there. Brings in new offensive coordinator. He's got two NFL draft picks at running back. They lose a lot of NFL talent. You know, Chop Robinson, the left tackle, or first-round guys. But they evaluate and develop some really good players on the offensive and defensive line. So it's a huge year. If you look at all these teams right here, huge year for James Franklin. And second most pressure on him this year is Brent Venables.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep. Especially coming off of the season we just saw Texas make. You know, I would say both Mike Elko, probably a little bit lesser. Obviously, year one, you kind of get that pass. But you got to do well in recruiting, and you have to at least be competitive in that game at the end of the season against the Longhorns. Texas putting a lot of heat early on in these coaches, whether it be Brent Venables or Mike Elko at the moment. So I'm enjoying this. I did write this down. Texas will play five teams in the top 20 of the FPI or of the FPI rankings. That's obviously Michigan at number 12, Georgia at 1, Oklahoma at 8, Florida number 20. A bit surprising.
We'll
see. But Texas A&M also coming at number 14, which kind of segues us a little bit, Rod, to what we wanted to bring up here as well. What the five stars on roster. Well, Texas and Texas A&M coming into 2024 with the same amount of high school five stars on the roster. Whether or not it feels like that, whether or not we'll see that kind of correlate to the wins and losses, that is the mark right there that we saw, I believe it was Pro Football Focus brought that up with 8 apiece. So certainly worth mentioning, they're not going to be completely void of talent in College Station. They might be a little bit light in terms of depth, but they will have some big time guys that will play in the NFL, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing considering all the turnover and, you know, just obviously the amount of attrition because of the coaching change. And still, that's how stacked that A&M roster is. They still got a ton of talent. Look at Alabama, same thing. I mean, that's how stacked that Alabama squad was. Saw a ton of attrition. Nick Saban left. You know, even Sark got a couple of those guys. And yet still, guys, look at that, 15. So, Kalen DeBoer, hey, the cupboard is not bare there. You see George, obviously, with 12. And they're going to be coming to Austin, Texas. And that's going to be a huge game. Georgia could even be number one by then. Who knows when it all comes down to it. But I think it's interesting, though. I'll say this about A&M. You can say this about Oklahoma, too. The metrics or maybe the analytics, the algorithms, whether you're talking about SP Plus, whether you're talking about this, of course, the FPI, the Football Power Index, they're all higher on A&M. And even Vegas, I would say, is a little bit higher on A&M. But it seems like the metrics are higher on A&M than most people are, right? They have A&M, the FPI at, 14 in the FPI. I believe the SP Plus had the Aggies in the SP Plus. They were 13th or something like that in the SP Plus overall. It seems like because I think the metrics are looking at the talent they've accumulated over the years. What the metric does not look at is the culture. It just looks at talent and it looks at experience. It doesn't look at culture. And that's something that the Aggies got to get right.
That's it, Rod. Look, I happen to know somebody really close to a player over there. And they said the biggest change from Jimbo Fisher to Mike Elko, and this won't surprise anybody, one strike. That's it if you were late to a meeting or a off-season workout when Elko got there. One strike, not two. Not three, not 1,000. One. Okay. By the way, 6 5-stars from the 2022 class are gone from College Station. And in some ways, that may make them a better team this year.
Wow. That's a great point, Jerry, to think about that. That's how much culture means when you start talking. And by the way, scheme. Yeah. And Jimbo Fisher, the culture might have been bad, but also the offensive, scheme was a very antiquated scheme. I mean, that thing was archaic.
Jerry, while we talked about this last week when I believe it was Athlon Sports came out with the anonymous coaches talking about, other schools or other programs in the SEC this year, that whoever they talked to from A&M or about A&M mentioned they have a good quarterback, Connor Wegman. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. You know, we saw the Dave Campbell's Texas High School Football magazine today with Quinn and Wegman on there. There was a comment, though, about whether or not he would end the year as the starting quarterback, or it would be Marcel Reed. Now, I know that we're here to talk Texas football, but, hey, that's a big game at the end of the year, and it will have large implications on the college football playoff. But that's it, and he didn't necessarily just say because of injury, right? We've seen Wegman go down. We've seen that offensive line be kind of stitched. Like, what are your thoughts on the potential of Marcel Reed pushing Wegman? Is that a – I mean, what do we think?
That would be – I mean, look, you can't run Wegman a lot. He's had multiple – had to sit out week injuries, and then he had the broken talus bone in his foot that required season-ending surgery. He's not a guy that you can run. Marcel Reed probably has a little bit more of that juice in him. I think the whole thing – I've been saying this is – the health of the quarterback and the production of quarterback is going to be totally dependent on the offensive line for A&M. I thought the portal spring guy that got out of Utah is actually a big upgrade at center for them. Yes. I'm not sure Bryce Foster cared. I thought that was a big upgrade for A&M at the center spot. Started the last eight games at Utah, and you know they're physical. Practices are physical football team. But it's going to me, how's that offensive line going to protect? I mean, they were – really bad a lot of the time last year. So the athleticism at the quarterback, if they're not much improved on the offensive line, Rod Babers, then, I mean, it's going to be hard to keep a guy healthy that's had a few injuries.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm with you on that. No, I mean, and they don't have the depth that a team like Texas does at the quarterback position potentially, but we'll see. I mean, I think that game could be big if A&M is – if they end up winning nine games, if they're in the nine win category somewhere in there, and I think Vegas has them at 8.5. And I don't think Longhorn fans have really entertained the possibility of the Aggies being good. And who would expect them to be with a first year coach in the SEC? But it's possible that, you know, that's I think they're favored versus Notre Dame. I believe they're favored versus LSU and Auburn, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Yeah. Well, no Alabama, no Georgia. So that schedule, I mean, there's room for them to win some games where you might look back on previous years and say, whoa, what's going on here? But I think they're going to be a good football team. And again, they have good NFL players, right? They have NFL caliber guys across that lineup. It's when they get into the two deep and the three deep where things might fall off a little bit.
How about it's hypothetical? Okay, so let's just say I'm going to keep Texas dreams alive in this hypothetical. They go 11-1 in the regular season, so they're still going to the SEC title game, still going to the college football playoff, still got a chance to, you know, get a bye, get one of those byes, right? Top four seeds who win their conference title, but you're gonna lose to one of your rivals.
Yeah,
which one would be the least damaging in your opinion?
You'd rather lose to Oklahoma than A&M this year. You want to beat Texas A&M year one in the SEC, Mike Elko year one. You want to beat A&M. At A&M, yeah, they'd have to stop people from jumping off the top of that stadium.
Yeah, because they might rush the field on you. You lose out there at Aggieland.
Yeah, no doubt.
They might rush the field on you, man. Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt. Hey, look, and that's a great point, Rod. I know for some people, losing Oklahoma 2 years in a row. You want to beat A&M this year.
I kind of feel like that. I've been saying for a while, this year, not any other year, but this year, that game feels bigger than Texas OU. Yeah, just this year, though. This year, somehow it feels
that. Well, here's the other crazy scenario for this game this year. It would be off the chain environment. If A&M won two of their first three, that means they either had to beat Notre Dame at home or at Florida week three. If they got off to a 2-1 start and had a big win and they stay healthy enough on the D-line and OL, it's not crazy to think if they start 2-1, they couldn't be 8-3 when Texas rolls into town. Could you imagine let's just for instance say 10-1 Texas in the playoffs, win or lose, A&M 8-3, if they win, they have a chance to get in.
Oh man!
Just imagine the magnitude of that. Spoiler. Or let me throw you another one. A&M's 8-3, and Texas is 9-2 in the winter. It's all on the line.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's why I love this game. The last week of the year, I know that's when all those. It's been tradition. You know, they've played it on Thanksgiving for forever, whenever it's still around. But it coming back and, you know, just kind of filling that void in the schedule. It's great because. One, the expectations, the rivalries, the emotions, they're going to be sky high anyway. And then you add the playoff implications, and now the storylines are crazy. Could you imagine in any given year this game deciding which team goes to the playoffs? Oh, that offseason would be hell for the losing school.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't know, for that's why I guess I'm excited, and I'm old school because I used to play in that game, but it feels different just because of them rekindling the rivalry. Will it be that big next year? It kind of depends on how this season goes. If it's going to be a really big rivalry next year, as big as Texas, Oklahoma, but this year it feels massive. All right, we'll get to some of the questions here, and then we'll get back to some of the other topics of the day. But I got to get a shout out to Nick Coronado says, hook him from Los Colinas. He says, playing a round of golf with Kenny the Shark Grant. He says, hook him. There you go. I appreciate that. Tell her we said hook him too. Hey, no doubt. That's family right there. How about this one? I'm glad we got my man Jerry Hamilton on because CB brings up a good point here. Chris Bennett, who is the new commit Rodney Terry picked up today, Jerry? I know you on it.
Yeah, Jamie Vinson he played at St. Michael's Academy. If freshman sophomore year, transferred over to Oak Hill. He was 6'8" and a half about the time he transferred over to Oak Hill. He's now 6'10", grown an inch and a half, late developer, really came on his senior year at Oak Hill, came down to Texas, Rutgers, South Carolina. Rutgers actually been pretty powerful in basketball recruiting, so don't just say, oh, it's Rutgers. Not in this class, not in the portal. They went big boy. They went Ole Miss.
Two, right? Top players in the country, Jerry?
Yeah. Dylan Harper, son of Ron Harper. I mean, they had a great class. And then South Carolina, obviously NCAA tournament team, made a run at the SEC title last year. But Jamie Vinson, Texas has two spots left. Now they have one spot left. So he's a 6'10 center, power forward that'll be a come in. He's a rim protector. I don't expect a lot from him this year. I don't want to ever count a kid out because in basketball, you get a summer with a Corey Schlesinger, the strength and conditioning coach of Texas basketball, is an absolute stud. He was with the Suns for a while. He was at Stanford with basketball and golf. I'm just telling you, I've been around him. He's a stud. So you don't want to count a guy out. But he's a small role rim protector next year, finds his way a little bit in college basketball, but a good pickup for the future because I know we live in the portal day and age, but you're still going to have to develop a high school big man. I mean, you're going to have to do that. You can't take all portal guys for two reasons. One, what the guys are asking for that are left in the portals it's seven figures. It's ridiculous, right? And people do have salary caps, jokingly. They have salary caps. You can't just go get everybody. You're not going to get three or four bigs out of the portal because the roles are going to be limited for some of those guys. Everybody wants to go play 25 minutes a game, and it's just not possible, especially when you have returning guys. So Jason Kent's going to play heavy minutes at the four. Caden Shedrick's going to play heavy minutes at the five. Then you have Zarek Onyema and a role player. A kid like this is a role player. Nick Cody coming off the knee surgery. Texas may add one more portal big. We'll see. But I think the guards are going to be really good on this team next year. They got size. They got length. They got versatility. They got lefties. They got righties. They got some mismatches. When Rodney Terry put this staff together, Miami Hurricanes team that beat Texas in the Elite Eight, went to the Final Four. If they could replicate a little bit of that with maybe a little more rim protection, I think that would be the ideal team. Guard-wise, they're getting closer to it. We'll see what happens. They got size. Trey Johnson's going to be a first-round pick, maybe a lottery pick. Texas hadn't had a 6'6 shooting guard that was a legit one of those in my years covering this.
Okay. I was going to add with Vincent, you see the smoothness in his stroke, right? How much of it will the three ball be a part of his game? We'll see. But he does look like it's very fluid, which is sometimes a big issue with those big guys as well. The weak side defender by the rim, that jumped off in his high school tape as well. He's got great timing and anticipation when coming across the paint. And that's, again, one of the biggest weaknesses that Texas had a year ago when it comes to defending the paint, making sure that shots are difficult around the rim. We'll see what he develops into, of course. You like the project, you like the piece. Now it's up to the staff to get them right and get the most out of them.
Hey, Rod, I'm going to follow with this real quick from Cody Pat. Yeah, Texas is recruiting for the now, but, like a JT Toppin, when that got over seven figures, that's not the now that Texas is going now.
Yeah, no, good stuff there. All right, thanks for the questions, guys. Actually, here's another really good one. It comes from Mav12. I like this one. It says, who scares y'all the most from the early G5 games Colorado State or UTSA? That is good. That's a good question. Is Frank Harris still there? Is this guy?
No, he's not. He it's Josh McCown. Josh McCown's son, Owen McCown, lefty.
Okay. All right. Good.
How old does that make you feel, huh? Makes me feel old.
That does make you feel old. I'm just glad.
He's a talented quarterback. The answer is UTSA. I think they're a better program. I think their coaching staff is tremendous down there with the way that they get the most out of the kids that they bring in. They've done a good job of rebranding how we've seen SMU kind of take over as Dallas's school. UTSA has done that for the 2-1-0 down in San Antonio. That team, if you go off of the ESPN FBI rankings that we were just looking at, UTSA is ranked 56th. And that's, again, that's higher than Vanderbilt. You know, that's right up there with Mississippi State, who's 49th. So they're in that contention for being one of the top G5 schools. Colorado State down at 105th. And, again, UL Monroe, 129th. So that's a game way down there out of the 133 Division I programs. 129th is pretty bad. So for me, also, what scares me about that game is, one, it's a lot of kids that are looking to beat Texas because they probably weren't recruited by Texas, right? They're from the area. They're familiar with the program. But two, you're coming off of a Michigan game the week before. And we've talked about trap games and what Kentucky might pose as problematic for the Longhorns later in the year. UTSA is going to be very similar to me coming off of that Michigan game week two, where you're going to have all the lights, all the news coverage. Everybody's going to be getting up for that game. I know you're coming back home, and I know it's not necessarily a big-time name coming to play you, but that's exactly the type of game that we saw Texas against Rice last year and Wyoming as well, where at home they were just very flat for three quarters before turning it on in the fourth. That's a game I'm looking at. If I had to pick a couple trap games on this year's schedule, Kentucky's one, UTSA might be a second one, where you don't necessarily lose, but it might not look very pretty for the first 45 minutes.
Hey, by the way, the week before that is the Baylor Bowl. That's Jeff Traylor versus G.J. Kinney.
Yep.
Oh, Baylor Bears Bowl the week before. Jeff Traylor may have a hangover if he wins it.
Seriously. Yeah, no, I agree with you because Jeff Traylor is a hell of a coach. I think Jeff Traylor will have a great – Jeff Traylor, when he's played Texas, they've had a really good game plan. Against Texas. That's what's kept him in it in some of those games. Remember, Texas ended up separating last time he played UTSA in like the third quarter, but it was close for like 2.5.
Rod. You know they're going to play hard.
It was close, and the game plan was an excellent game plan. They used a lot of empty formation. Remember how long they kept the football in the first half? They just played keep away from Sark. And what we talked about, what's the best way to beat Sark? Keep away. Just keep him on the sideline watching the defense. Because if Sark gets the football, then damage is going to be done because he's an offensive, savant pretty much, right? So you just want to take him out of the equation. And when you play ball control, you do that. Washington did that against Texas. And honestly, that's a lot of what UTSA did. Go back and watch the game. They did that early on. And then Texas separated, of course, because they have the talent advantage. So, yeah, UTSA and Jeff Traylor always kind of scary to me.
Hey, UTSA is going to be a little different level of a measuring stick this year for me. 2 years ago, think about where Texas was as a program. Now, since that game, two more top five recruiting classes, NFL players coming in out of the portal. I think UTSA is going to see a Texas team on tape and say, whoa, 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 whoa. It's going to be like, whoa, this isn't the guys we played 2 years ago. I think once you get on the field, there's going to be a major difference between the last time Texas played, I think Hudson Card started that game, if I remember right.
I think and where right.
Texas was as a program versus now, the year after Frank Harris is gone for UTSA. But UTSA, I mean, like they got a former A&M 5-star, Denver Harris, manning a corner spot if he's there at the start of the season.
Rod, to your point about the time of possession that UTSA, you know, kind of took approach to in that game, Texas ended up winning 41-20, right? They outscored UTSA 24-3 in the second half. Time of possession, 36-21 for UTSA, 23-39 for Texas. And that's 25 more plays run for UTSA than the Longhorns. So that's going to be a duplicate approach and game style that we'll see from them again this year. And again, to your point, it's the one way that we've seen teams really kind of halt this Texas offense is just, hey, You don't get the ball. You're going to limit possessions and make sure that you don't get the rock as often as you hope to see.
And remember, it was like Frank Harris. They tried a fourth and one. Y'all remember this? And they tried a wide receiver, like a bubble screen. And the wide receiver dropped it. It was actually a good throw by Frank. He drops it. And then everything kind of starts to spiral down from there because they were kind of hanging on by a thread. They missed.
It was a tight game at halftime.
Yeah. And remember, they missed. Was it early on? Did they go? It was a third and goal. And they missed it and had to settle for a field goal. And they were going to line up, and they were, oh, man. I'll tell you, Jeff Traylor had a hell of a game plan ready. He just, I'm with Jerry. The talent advantage then, it's going to be very different than the talent advantage now. And then it took Texas like three quarters to separate. Now it may take Texas a quarter and a half, something like that is what I expect. But I expect to see a really good game plan from Jeff Traylor.
Yeah,
that's what you count on.
Hey, by the way, I would take Baylor over Arkansas. I know some may disagree. I like Ski Breaks. Funny. My neighbor – Bobby Petrino. That's pretty funny. I could see him being the interim. I don't know. Boy, could they hire him as the head coach again? That would be wild.
Wouldn't that be something?
I know that people are talking about that. I've heard that too. That
when, you know who's hoping Petrino gets rehired by Arkansas? Chris Beard. All right, keep going.
For a lottery, that's a good point. That's a good point. But no, I've heard that too, though. I've heard that as well, that if Pittman's out, that there is at least a group that they want. I don't know if it's the folks that are making the decisions, but there are some people there that they wouldn't mind seeing Bobby Petrino get that gig.
Wow. By the way, I think that is a brutally hard job in college football now with Texas and OU moving to the SEC. Where are you going to go to recruit players? I mean, everybody says, well, it's easy. Jerry Jones is going to throw a bunch of money to NIL. Well, that's going to basketball right now. They're very basketball-focused over there.
Basketball and baseball.
They got a lot of money, though, guys. They got six or seven. Don't they got some Walmart money, too? Tyson is a big one.
Is the Calipari money.
They got like three sugar daddies there or sugar mamas or whatever. But they got that's so one can take basketball, one can take football, you know what I mean? One can take baseball,
is
whatever.
Jerry Jones allowed to he's not allowed to do NIL, right? Because of his affiliation with the Cowboys. That's a big issue with Mark Cuban and Indiana until recently, because it's
I'll have to double check on that, but I think there's a good question.
Ski Breck had another one. JB Hunt too. That's another one. But yeah. Tyson Chicken. Tyson's the big one. That was how Cal got the Arkansas job. That's one of his golfing buddies. Tyson. And somebody in the Tyson family is like one of his best friends, and that's how that whole Musselman the USC Cal thing came about.
Yeah, so I mean, they definitely got enough, you know, money behind the scenes to weaponize NIL if that's what they want to do. Let's get to a couple of recruiting questions here, guys. How about this one from KD35? I am the best. Says Zion Williams committing on the 4th of July. Is that good or bad for Texas?
LSU was one. Texas was two going into the visit to LSU. LSU's a stronger one. Texas is a week or two, but he's still going to continue on with the visit process. Texas will get him in June 21st through 23rd. I think the thing right now for everybody that you kind of remember that's following all the recruiting stuff is we need Matt may need to make a recruiting bingo card for the month of June, actually. So it's everything was great on every visit. It increases the lead. Has a realistic shot, silent commitment. Those are the terms of the month, right? Coming out of every visit. But I'm more of the I take the Sark approach on this stuff nowadays. I'm letting things play out through June. Look, Texas had guys silently committed last year that didn't end up at Texas.
Yep.
I mean, so I know in our industry, I've been in it two decades. We play all those games, and it's sub-selling, and I get it from the industry perspective out there, but. I'm more of let these things play out. These kids are going to have incredible highs coming off these visits. Rod can remember this. What's the hardest thing to do? Say no.
Amen, brother. Yep.
Hardest thing to do is say no for these kids. Hey, at the end of the visit on site, how you feeling about it? You think this is a place for you? Yeah, coach, I do. You know, well, hey, man, we got seven guys at this position coming in. We got three spots. What do you think? I'm coming, coach. Silent commitment. Does he sign? That's something totally different.
Now, it is very important for Texas to get the last visit here. And we've seen Texas, whether it be a Colin Simmons and Anthony Hill, you know, some of those big recruitments in the past, that last visit, they do very well. They've had 3 weeks to prepare. They get that final kind of impression going into the dead period as well. Not to mention, Texas knows how to play the game when it comes to hosting official visits. We hear great stories all the time about the impression, the meetings, the time on campus. That'll be big if Texas is looking to make up the ground from LSU here, is ending that summer visit schedule with a bang.
All right, good stuff there. All right, before we answer some more questions here, I want to give a shout-out to our fantastic sponsor, South Point Dodge. Really appreciate them being part of the On Texas football team and sponsoring the winning drive. So, Texas football fans, if you are looking to score an easy point this season, you can get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning sales staff, they don't play games. They're not about gimmicks. They just are about getting straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Also, don't forget that South Point Dodge is Austin's automotive everything. So if you're looking to sell your car, get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make or model, even if you didn't buy it from the South Point Dodge folks. So South Point Dodge, home of the real deal, whether you're getting that lowest price on the best new Ram trucks or making sure you get the best value for your old car. So visit them today at southpointdodge.com or visit them off of I-35 in South Austin at southpointdodge.com. So thank you very much for your support. We appreciate them sponsoring the winning drive. All right, getting back to the questions here. Burnt Orange Horn, I like this question. So Dia Bell is QB1. Whomever Sark signs, he will be the better developed QB. I am even happy if both decide to sign with Texas. What are your thoughts? I got a theory I'm working on too about Sark and quarterbacks. But your initial thoughts here, CJ, about Burnt Orange Horn, Dia Bell being the QB1. You too, Jerry, as well. I want both of you guys' thoughts about this.
Yeah, I think, look, he met with Sark and staff Saturday morning before the elite camp started, got a lot of attention from him during the camp. I think that was kind of visually seen by other quarterbacks. So I think Dia Bell has the first shot at committing to Texas in 26 class. He's going to be at FSU June 9th, Ohio State the 11th, LSU the 12th, 13th. I think he makes a June decision sometime after that. FSU, curiously to me, when I was down there in mid-May, I thought Texas, LSU, Penn State on the peripheral. There was a lot of Penn State talk early on. I didn't get that impression down there. I thought it was Texas, LSU. Florida State just offered him about 10 days ago, and they get a visit right out of the gate. They get a visit immediately when some other schools aren't. So that's interesting to see. Where does FSU actually move in this process coming up this weekend? Then that trip to Ohio State. But I really think schools in the South, and I think Texas feels pretty good about it right now. I'm curious on FSU. That's one I'm curiously going to follow, because you offer that late and you get that quick visit, there could be something a little more there than what people know about this recruitment since Florida State didn't offer till late May. Troy Hoon will be CJ. Will be at what, Clemson, Michigan, Clemson, Penn State, Auburn. In the next month or so. Yeah.
Yeah, I chatted with Troy earlier today, just kind of getting an idea of what his June schedule would look like. And, of course, he mentioned those four schools, Clemson, Auburn, Michigan, Penn State. He will be going to see them. A bit of a new development there, I would say, because it did feel like if Texas was to take him, he would be in the class, right? He does kind of have that pro-Texas mindset early on. So for him to go take other visits, that's, you know, news to me as well. I asked him, hey, do you think you'll have a decision or an idea of when a commitment might be able to come? He said, I have no idea. No plans at the moment. I'm going to go take my visits. I'm going to go see where things sit, and then we'll move on from there. But right now, no imminent decision coming following the Texas visit, and he will be taking those four visits. So just, again, putting out everything together, reading what and hearing what we heard from whether it be prospects, players, coaches, family members, whatever, at the Texas Elite Camp this past weekend, it did sound like Dia Bell got that extra kind of you know, attention from the Texas staff. Also worth mentioning that he was on campus much earlier than Troy was Saturday, who arrived right around 11 o'clock for 11:45 check-in for registration for the camp. So that's where things sit right now. I do believe Dia is that guy for the Texas staff as of where we record right now, 4:50 on a Monday.
Hey, Rod, I'm going to do a little recruiting speed dating real quick. But there's like three questions. But here, it's breaking. Let's this is huge news in college sports. OU lost a softball game. I think they'd won like 20 in a row in postseason. They lost to Florida. So now Florida and OU have to play again to see who goes to the national title to play Texas after Texas beats the Swimmers tonight at Stanford. So look, if Florida could upset OU one more time, I mean, that would be pretty interesting to me. I didn't see that one coming. So that's actually big news that won't in college sports is Oklahoma lost a postseason game in softball. Hey, I don't know if it's been 19 or 20 in a row, but it's been a lot.
That's pot calling the kettle black, Jerry. Swimmers calling swimmers.
I know. I had to think of something because they're not playing football anymore. Okay. AJ Sports. Jerry, I saw LSU got a prediction to flip Brandon Brown. Kind of goes back to what I was talking about. Look, I mean, the flip picks are all coming in. The predictions are all coming in. Here's my update on Brandon Brown. I think he's got the best relationship he has is with Bo Davis. Bo Davis was on him before when a lot of people were saying, Brandon, you're too short. And Brandon's not too short. If people think he's too short, they didn't go to DeSoto and watch Byron Murphy or Aaron Donald at Pitt or some of the other guys. They're all wrong. But Brandon Brown does like Bo Davis quite a bit, that relationship and that resume for development. But here's the update. Spoke with somebody close to that recruitment, very close to that recruitment this afternoon. He's still making all his official visits. Tennessee next weekend, Texas the 14th through 16th. It looks like Miami could be the final visit, the 21st through 23rd. So does he love Bo Davis? Yeah, that's his long-standing relationship in this recruiting process. Is he still going to visit Texas? Yep, he's going through with his visit process. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think LSU did very good work this weekend, as you'd expect, because that relationship with Bo Davis. But just think back to this time 2 months ago. All the people thought he was going to flip the USC, CJ. They didn't think he'd remain committed to Texas. So I'm more in the – 2 months ago, Jamie French was a lock to Ohio State, by the way. Lock, done deal, silently committed. Where is he now? Not even visiting. So I'm not saying Brown won't end up at LSU. What I'm saying is these things have to play out a little bit. Then I want to say where does Texas stand with Dorian Brew? Visiting this weekend, official visit this weekend, visited LSU last weekend, has Oregon, has Ohio State, USC's in the mix. I think Texas is in a pretty good spot for Dorian Brew, but let's see how these visits play out with Dorian. But I think Sark and these guys have zeroed in on Dorian Brew for a long time as their top corner in the state of Texas. Are the California recruits coming in this weekend? You may have to tell me who specifically, but the two guys on the list are Josiah Sharma and Caleb Edwards. Josiah Sharma and Myron Charles, who's now officially visiting this weekend. Those are the two D linemen visiting Texas, but there's two Cali guys on the list this weekend.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Jerry, for the speed round. I know you call it speed dating. Speed dating just shows how old we are, Jerry. Yeah, we don't know the speed dating reference. CJ's like, what are y'all talking about, speed dating?
Yeah. Hey, we'll be back in two and two.
Yeah, that is swiping left and right. It's all CJ knows about is like the dating apps. Still know about speed dating from back in the day. All right, there you go. So thank you, Jerry, for the recruiting kind of whip around there. We'll get back to some of the questions here because Government CB's got another one here. If you got some more questions or super chat, please just throw them out there. The super chats can jump to the front of line, of course, at any time. Real quick, I think some congratulations are in order. I did see this that Michael Huff and Dan Neal has been actually a candidate for the College Football Hall of Fame before, but I believe this is Michael Huff's first time being a candidate for the College Football Hall of Fame. And those two will be candidates this upcoming cycle for the College Football Hall of Fame. There's no doubt Huff Daddy's going to make it in. I'm not sure about Dan Neal. I love me some Dan Neal. Dan Neal's a great guy, but Huff Daddy's definitely going to make it in. One of the greatest DBs in Texas football history. So I did see that and wanted to give a shout out to my man Huff Daddy, who's still around there, by the way, still around there lifting weights. I mean, Huff Daddy, I'm not even sure what Huff Daddy's actual role or title is, but he, every time I see him, I tell him he needs to stop lifting weights, man. It's okay. Just stop. Why are you still lifting weights? I don't understand what's going on there. So there you go. Congratulations on order to those guys. Any thoughts, gentlemen, on the College Football Hall of Fame? It looks like the two Longhorns, Dan Neal and Michael Huff, were added to the ballot for the 2025 class. It's a loaded class, like it always is, by the way. I mean, it's
hey, Rod, what did people talk about with Dan Neal, if you remember, when you got the text? You got there right after Dan Neal went to the NFL, a couple of years after. I mean, was he a name brought up then? Because he's the best undersized offensive lineman in since the mid to late 90s that Texas has had, right? I mean, he was, what, 275-ish at Texas, 265, 275?
Yeah.
Hell of a mean streak on contact.
Yeah, and now you see him, I mean, and you can tell he was pushing it. When he was, what'd you say, it was 275, 280, because now you see Dan Neal and you wouldn't even recognize him. I mean, he looks great, slimmed down. But, yeah, I mean, we didn't hear – that's a crazy thing about it. We didn't hear a lot about Dan Neal. I found out more about Dan Neal after I left Texas.
Okay.
And then kind of the, you know, the lore and legend of Dan Neal as just a – I mean, he was just a freaking, you know, Tasmanian devil at the interior offensive line, at the guard position. And he was just so athletic that – when they would pull him on some of those plays, whether it be a count or whatever it was, he was fantastic. And that was the perfect translation for him to go to the NFL and end up in the right system at the Shanahan zone blocking system. And honestly, he always talks about if he didn't end up in that system, he's not sure if his NFL career works out the same way, because he was perfectly compatible with that zone blocking system at the NFL level. So
I got a question for y'all. Rod, maybe you, CJ's too young for some of this stuff we throw out. And the chat, most important tackle, not the hardest hit, most important tackle in the history of Texas football. Was it Mike Huff? It's a good question.
Important tackle.
Most important tackle.
That's good. It could be Huff Daddy.
Because that game was over.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game on the line. You're right. I mean, that possibly you don't win a national title if not for that play.
On 54 years of that one.
So there's not one bigger than that. I think you're right. So that's we're talking about the biggest tackle in Texas football history.
Most important tackle. Most important tackle in Texas football history. Now, there may have been one in the 60s pre me and Rod. Bobby might have a different answer.
Yeah.
CJ dates back to 04.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you could say in the last 50 years or so, but I don't know. You're right. The DKR year, somebody might be able to dispute you, but not in the modern era. That's no doubt. That's a great point. You're right about that. And to me, Huff Daddy kind of, you know, he symbolized one of the peaks of DBU. Like, he was at one of the peaks of it, and such a versatile defender. I mean, he was the perfect example of he was the epitome of the five-tool DB that Coach Aquino was always praising and championing. And it was, man, Michael Huff, he could do anything. He could cover, you can put him at corner, put him at safety, put him at nickel.
Hey, talk about this with Huff real quick before we move on real quick. Talk about the player he was when he got there and what he developed into. Because I think nowadays with the portal and with high school recruiting and the rankings and everything and how big it is, we're so much more instant gratification. But Michael Huff came in far from what he became.
Yeah. I remember the thought was that he was just a track guy that was trying to play football when he came in. So remember, there's a lot of talk about how fast he was and his speed. But that it translated really well to the football field. And the best thing about Huff was I think his football instincts were really underrated. And that's why, you know, I think Coach Aquino did a great job of putting him in the right position. I think he played safety and also played some nickel for Texas back there. His instincts were amazing. So Coach Aquino wanted to put him in the mix as much as possible. Wherever the action happened quickest, put him there and let his instincts take over. And he had great ball skills. I mean, really, as I said, he actually developed it into a DB that really didn't have a weakness once he left college. I mean, talking about the NFL level, everybody's different. But once he left college, like, there was no weakness in his game.
Yeah.
Think about that. Like, that's – I mean, he won a Thorpe. the best DB in the country. But even the best DBs in the country sometimes don't have a well-rounded skill set. I mean, he was one of those guys that that was no real weakness in his game. Even Quentin Jammer had a weakness in his game. I mean, Quentin Jammer was drafted top five, but Quentin Jammer didn't have loose hips. He was built like, I mean, yeah, he had 36-inch pythons for arms, and they were, his wingspan was like an avatar, but his hips weren't necessarily loose. So that was one of the things you could get on Jam. If you got him out of position, you can get around him because his hips didn't always, you know, they weren't really flexible, and he didn't have quick loose hips for a defensive back. But he had great catch-up speed. He could run like a straight up 4.3. So it wouldn't be long before his catch-up speed would negate whatever issues he had at the line of scrimmage. Also, if you got his hands on his line of scrimmage, you were screwed. So every great player usually has got some type of hiccup in their game or some type of issue or weakness. And I can say by the time Huff Daddy left, there was no weakness. I mean, this guy was getting double-digit tackles for loss and getting interceptions in his second year. I mean, he was – every level of the defense, Huff Daddy was making plays. It's crazy. Hey,
question for you, CJ. Is this since you cover the press conference, has anybody ever asked Sark this, or are we not allowed?
I don't know. I've not heard him talk about it, but it's certainly worth jogging his brain.
I would say don't be the first.
that's a good question, though.
Hey, Rod, how about that pony package? Reggie Bush and Lindell White, baby.
Somebody should ask that question, though. Somebody should. I'm just curious. I want to know now at this point. I think Sark would. I think Sark would have a. I don't know. I think he'd have a good attitude about it. I don't think he would. I don't think he would look at you crazy. He wouldn't give you the evil eye.
Because nobody knows who made the call. Nobody knows the why. You're kind of, well, you know the why is they've been running power with Lindell White successfully the entire game, right? And Lindell and Reggie Bush was throwing the ball to people in the crowds and stuff going down the field. So, I mean, you kind of get it, but at the same time, it's like he was the best. Arguably, he wasn't. Vince Young was the best player in college football, but he was the Heisman Trophy winner and the best player in college football that year.
Yeah.
Did Lindell go out that same draft? Did they start together in Tennessee together, him and Vince? Yeah.
Yes, I believe he did.
Yes, they did. Yeah, they were there because my man Bo Scaife was up there with him too. After a little while, both skeezy. And it's crazy that Pete Carroll's known for two very infamous calls, short yardage goal line calls, where, you know, they should have had a different running back carrying the football on those occasions. And obviously, infamously, not the case. Yeah. All right. Good stuff there. So shout out to my man, Huff Daddy. And I hope Dan Neal makes it too. If Dan Neal don't get enough love. And he's been on the ballot before, like I said, and hasn't made it. So those are the two Longhorns that are up for the College Football Hall of Fame. All right. Yeah, I know my man CB here says, some SEC hack was on Feinbaum today saying A&M will finish higher than Texas this season. Yes, I saw it. It's SEC Mike is his name. And he usually does good work and doesn't. He's not into hyperbole that much. But, yeah, that was kind of wild. Even Feinbaum was taken aback. Feinbaum very rarely is speechless, and he was speechless for like 8 seconds. He just kind of stared like, what? Are you serious? You going to say that on this show?
What's interesting is he put out an SEC like leaderboard or his projections for this upcoming season. He had Texas third, and he had Texas A&M eighth. So I don't know what switched over the last, three weeks.
He got a call from College Station about some scoop.
It must have been.
Hey, and Elko, baby. Hey, he's a believer in Elko. He found out about Elko. I've been hearing good things about Elko, though, so I'll say that. And Jerry,
they're going to play really good defense, right, Rod? They got a good scheme. Yeah. They got good first-string personnel. They've done good work in the portal. They're going to be really good on defense. Mike Elko is going to give them a chance to win every game. I don't think they're going to go into a game and just get – bushwhacked. I mean, if Notre Dame goes out and throws 38 on him and beats him 38-10, then we'll be having a different discussion about A&M, considering that's a home game. But I think A&M is going to play really good defense, so it's going to give him a chance to win close games. Here's another one. We missed an important tackle. We were thinking about Texas tackles. Marcell Dareus.
Down. Come on.
Yeah, Rod, I got that same reaction.
The two biggest ones, that's a great one, Burn Orange Horn. The two most important ones happened in national championship games. One went Texas way and one went the other.
Damn.
One started a dynasty.
Oh, man.
And one ended one.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you know what? That is – it still hurts. It still stings a little bit thinking about that. Yeah, because that was – I was there at that one. That one, wow. And Mac, like I would say, Mac Brown, I've never seen him more confident, guys. He was borderline arrogant. He was borderline cocky. Mac's never like that. Mac knew. When I talked to Mac before that game, Mac knew. Mac was like, man, we going to light him up. They ain't ready for this spread that we about to bring to them. They're not. That defense of Saban's wasn't really built to defend the spread at the time. That was the start of the dynasty.
You knew Nick knew it going into the game when he faked it early. That was out of character for him. You knew he was like, I got to score. I got to possess the ball. I got to find a way to get points in this game. Yep. That was a sure sign. I mean, Bob Stoops, he do that all the time. Nick Saban, not really.
Nope. No, I'm with you. I had a fact because Mac made me feel like, oh, Texas is going to win this one. And then that tackle. Anyway, all right. Sorry to bring you down. George Lopez, thank you very much. George, we appreciate you, brother. La Familia, baby. We appreciate that. The community for the diaper fund. Thanks for all the great work y'all provide. Hook 'em Horns. Who commits next, in your opinion? He wants to know, guys. Woo! George wants to know. Thank you, George, for the super chat. Who commits next to the Longhorns out of
CJ, 7 official visitors this weekend. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but somebody's saying who could be next. Josiah Sharma, not likely, has Alabama the 21st through 23rd. Caden Edwards, Texas has 3 tight ends, 1 committed coming in late June. Caleb Edwards has visits all over the country. He goes from Texas to Auburn, Alabama, blah, 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 on to Oregon at the end of the month. Dorian Brew probably likely still goes through the visit process, goes to Oregon, goes to Ohio State or USC. You get down to the other defensive back position, though. Caleb Chester, CJ, is one I'm kind of watching, and I'm not saying it's happening, but A&M's got 4 corner / nickel guys already committed in the 25 class. Yeah. And when I was at Marshall 2 weeks ago, I thought A&M in Texas, unless something happened and somebody offered his brother, who's in junior college, I believe it either Blinn or Navarro, if a TC or somebody offered his brother, maybe that could change the game. But if that game changer didn't happen, I thought Texas or Texas A&M for Caleb Chester, since he wasn't visiting LSU.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me when you look at the group coming in. Of course, 7 guys coming in. I do think Texas sits in a good spot right now for Dorian Brew. But to your point, carrying out that recruitment, those official visits for the rest of the month, getting into July, I think is exactly where you start to see a lot of these recruitments go. Will guys shut it down early? Yeah, Texas has pushed for guys in the month of June, more in the back half, the last 3 cycles. Caleb Chester to me is an interesting one because he was on campus at the back half of spring. And it sounded like when we talked to him afterward, Texas was really, I know it's a post-visit high, but they were doing a very good job in his recruitment at the moment. Of course, Jerry, you got to talk to him as well. And coming away with those Texas A&M recruitment conclusion, again, A&M's filling up early on a lot of talented defensive backs. Will they have room? Will they push? Right now, I have to imagine Texas is in the best spot for him. It's going to be interesting. One other name I wanted to mention is, what kind of push does Texas make for Josiah Sharma, right? We just mentioned Zion Williams. We just mentioned Brandon Brown earlier. It's going to be Texas and Alabama. I know Washington's in that fold as well. But when it comes to the Texas getting up early and hosting big-time defensive line recruits, that's going to be one to watch as well. He was on campus earlier in the spring as well. So I'll be keeping a close eye on all of them, obviously, but those are the 3 that I'm looking at. Hey, Texas might be pushing, and if one does come, I do think I'm with you, Jerry. Caleb Chester's probably that top guy at the top of the list for who could make a move before anyone else.
And kind of follow up here, Rod, if Texas loses Brandon Brown, how dire is the DT situation? I wanted to update that. Spoke with somebody close to his recruitment. The official visits go on. So coming out, everybody's like, he's flipping LSU. He's going to LSU. Well, and I do think his best relationships, Bo Davis, we've been saying that, well, since he committed to Texas, because Bo is one of the guys that believed in him early on. But everybody should believe in Brandon Brown's talent. He's got to go get it done, but he's ultra talented. So he's going to visit Tennessee, Texas, probably Miami. So we'll see how it plays out. Coming off the high of that LSU visit, everything is great right now. If he goes through that official visit process, he goes and visits Texas. It's going to come down to Texas and LSU. I think Miami could make it muddy, but I think he's going to play in the SEC. It's going to come down to Texas and LSU, and we'll see if Texas can overcome Bo Davis's relationship, because the kid and his mom had a great visit to Texas in March.
There you go. Good stuff. All right. Thank you very much for the super chat there. We appreciate it. I want to ask you guys just kind of a question, setting up for a conversation. Who would you guys say is the most underappreciated player on the roster for Texas? Ooh. Underappreciated.
Jake Majors.
That's a great one.
That is, Jerry read my damn mind. That's beautiful. It really was. That's brilliant. That's the guy that I want to have a conversation about. CJ, you got one? Because that's a good one. That's a great one.
It's hard to find a guy that trumps him in that category, right? I have to, maybe a Gunnar Helm, but hey, Jake's been around for much longer. He's had much more snaps. I think that's a great answer. Yeah.
You know what? Say that, Rod. One, he's improved over time. He was a good prospect coming out. We had him. I was at ESPN Under Armour. We had him in the Under Armour game. He was a good center prospect at the time. Needed to get a lot stronger. But I go back to the Alabama game last year. Remember when we were talking about how tough that environment was going to be, and he had maybe the most important job. Everybody's like, "No, Quinn." Well, Texas was coming off a game with a bunch of pre-snap penalties and really a bunch of crap flags that Sark probably wasn't happy with, right? And to say you're going into this environment, Nick Saban was 51-1 in the last 52 games there. Hadn't lost a non-conference game since blah, blah, blah. Last team to beat him was LSU in 19. And you're like, okay, Texas, big, bad Texas, or hated Texas at the time, is going into Alabama. And you knew it was going to be a crazy environment. And we all talked about it, Rod. Jake Majors had a huge job in that game to keep everybody calm, no pre-snap penalties, make all these signals in a hostile environment. Because if he doesn't have a good game, Texas wasn't going to win. He had to play well against Alabama for Texas to win that game. Because if they got behind the chains a bunch, if they had a lot of pre-snap penalties, they didn't look cohesive, they weren't communicating well, the timing was thrown off, they're not winning that game. And that'll always be underrated to me.
And they're certainly not running off the final 7.5 minutes of the clock. When you go up 10 in the fourth quarter trying to seal that deal, that's not happening with the bad performance from Jake Majors.
That's a great point. And, you know, this is the stat that I saw, too. I started on Pro Football Focus. Thank you, Matthew, for pulling it up. And I thought to myself, man, we under – because the guy's been a starter now since, 2021? He's been a starter for him? I mean, that's considering they've been bringing in a lot of big-time O-linemen, you'd have thought if Jake Majors wasn't playing to a certain standard or wasn't improving, like you said, Jerry, then they would have already usurped him. That has not been the case, man. Jake Majors has gotten better every year, and I think Jake Majors got an NFL ceiling now that he's improved to that extent. I think the other guy we'll throw out there for most underappreciated would probably be Bert Arvin, who just got a scholarship.
Yeah.
He'd probably be the other guy because Bert Arvin was great last year toward the end. Malik Muhammad is underappreciated.
I wouldn't say so this season. This offseason, I think he's getting his flowers, his due. Yeah. I think folks are looking at him like he might be an all-SEC caliber guy at the cornerback position. David Benda would be a good one for me as well, a guy that's paid his dues, waited his turn. Now you're looking at a potential starting linebacker in the SEC with David Benda, who's up to about 244 pounds right now. I would go him before I go Muhammad, but that's not a knock. It's, again, underappreciated is the term here.
My other guy would be on the porch, Sorrell, Baron Sorrell.
That's a great one.
And even more so this year, Rod, because he's going to be called upon.
That's a good one.
With Murphy and Sweat not there. I mean, look, he's got a big job. That guy shows up with the same consistency game in, game out. Now, he's not the flash guy, so he's always going to be underappreciated, right? Moore, Colin Simmons could come in and have more sacks than him this year. In year ones at Texas for those guys. But Baron Sorrell is going to be underappreciated for what he does at that edge spot.
That might be my number two behind Jake Majors, honestly. Najee said it. He might be number two. Because Bert Arvin gets some love just because – he's Bert Arvin. He's got the kooky hair. And we talk about Bert Arvin a lot. You know, obviously, especially last year when he had the record-setting performance late in the season. But yeah, Baron Sorrell, I'm going to admit with you, Baron Sorrell does not get enough love, because especially even this year, we talked about how deep they are at the edge position, and yet we still don't talk enough about Baron Sorrell. So the coaches, they're really high on Baron Sorrell because I think they watch his work, and they watch how he really earns the respect of his teammates and how he's transformed his body over the years. Getting back to Jay Majors, Jay Majors didn't finish that Oklahoma game though, right? He got hurt.
No, yeah, he got hurt the first series, and Connor Robertson played really well. Or second series, Connor Robertson played well in a tough environment, because that's when it was going bad early on too, when he had to come in.
Yeah,
and I was in the stadium, and people were like, "Ah," and then he played really well. Not because Robertson can't play; it's just the timing of the injury with the turnovers,
that environment.
Yeah,
yeah. No, you're right about that. I somebody just texted me and was like, "Hey, don't forget he got hurt and we lost the game." And I was like, "We actually played pretty well, because you just pointed out, Jerry, he got hurt pretty early on in that matchup." Anyway, random conversations. Wanted to get that there. Back to the questions here before we get ready to close things out. LLC wants to know, CJ Vogel, who is the first team you're starting a dynasty with, not named Texas? I'm sure he's talking about the game.
This is a big one for CJ now.
I like it. Good question.
You can step on some landmines here.
No. We got to go with the team that everybody likes. They got great colors, a great mascot, great turf. We're going to Coastal Carolina, and we're starting out there.
Oh, the Chanticleers?
That's right. Listen, this was one of my favorite things to do back in the day. Put the game on that's hardest difficulty and see what I could do with a program that's on the up and coming. You know, I'd start at Rice, go to Kansas even, and see if I could overcome the impossible and win a title there. I'm going to Coastal Carolina, and we're gonna run some folks out the building.
I like that. Yeah. And what I've heard about the game is that the playbooks are supposed to be pretty detailed based on
We'll see about that.
That's because Coastal Carolina is supposed to have a really creative offense.
Right.
One of the more creative offenses in college football, so I want to see what they do with it. But there you go, my man. CJ, that was a nice pick. That was very – for you, you were able to – yeah, you straddled the fence there. No Longhorn fans going to be mad at you for going with a Coastal Carolina dynasty there, so good job. How about this one from Jameson Washington? Jerry, what's the status on DeJon Lee and Texas? Is this a possibility, or is Texas too far behind on this recruitment?
Far behind going into the midweek official visit, which will be the first for Sark, by the way. So that tells you how good they think this kid is. I ain't pretty far behind entering the official visit, but look, I don't want to underrate Johnny Nance and the work he's doing in California. If he closes on two or three of these guys that were kind of not come out of nowhere, but maybe you didn't think Texas had a real shot on two or three months ago, then you're going to have to tip your duck hat to him. But I would say they're coming from way behind there right now.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that he dropped the top four after scheduling some of these official visits, and Texas was not a part of that. Of course, that official visit as of about a week ago was still scheduled to occur June 12th through 14th. So, hey, if Texas gets them on campus, you never know what happens. But right now, they've got a long road ahead of them.
Hey, by the way, CJ's head coach is Tim Beck for Coastal Carolina. All right.
That's right. Yeah.
We're going to be running QB power to the right and QB power to the left.
Are you rethinking this now?
It may be a little bit.
I'm going to move this one up, John. Would everybody be okay, anyone be okay, if Michael Terry committed? I'll say this. I think CJ and I would be ecstatic if he committed. Michael Terry is a beast of an athlete. I mean, CJ's seen him in person this spring, 6'2 and a quarter, 218, long arms, big hands, runs fast, has fluidity. I don't know if Roschon 2-0. I say Amari Knoblach 2-0 is a possibility.
Wow. The range that this dude can – like, people are throwing out the range of different positions he can play. How many different positions do you think he can play at the next level, Jerry?
I think realistically – outside edge, rush linebacker, and most likely a tight end-ish position like Knoblach, I think, is where he's at his best. He wants to play wide receiver. CJ, he was, 215 when you saw him in person? And he plays multiple sports in high school. He's not even close to filling out. He goes to you're not going to be able to keep him under 230 pounds. I'd be shocked.
I would say, 240, I think, is he could carry that and carry it well. He's a great athlete, great track kid. I saw him in the weight room when I was out there, and I mean, he can move some weight, but I think there's still plenty of room for him to physically mature, which leads to what side of the ball might he end up being on as well.
So this is a great point. David Rawls said this, and LL said this on Michael Terry. This is a great point. okay? JT Sanders wanted to play tight end. He played outside receiver and edge, but he was more of an offensive guy. Michael Terry wants to play wide receiver. So yeah, there's some similarities there. I think it's great points both these guys made. And that's why I compare maybe Niblack level athlete that transitions to that tight end spot, maybe his best spot. Now, Niblack may be an inch taller than he is, but Michael Terry would be a tight end that moves like a wide receiver, Rod. He takes handoffs in high school, fluid athlete. Some people have said safety. There's just no way. He's too big. But I could see that transition to an Amari Niblack.
He's been recruited at running back too. I just don't see that as a long-term position fit, specifically not at Texas, where we see the speed, we see the cutting ability. I think he's more of a straight line guy when it comes to how athletic he is.
I like that. Good conversation. Shout out to Tom. Tom Doyle says, good morning from Guam. Hook 'em, boys. Oh. Hey, appreciate you joining. He's got folks all over. All over. Hey, we appreciate you, man, being part of the Owen Texas football family. No doubt about it. All right, before we get ready to close this thing out, once again, we have to thank our fantastic sponsor. We are so happy to have our good friends over at South Point Dodge as a part of the Owen Texas football family. And once again, folks, if you're trying to get to the point, you can get to the point, straight to the point, with our good friends over at South Point Dodge. Perfect time for you to do it right now over at South Point Dodge. Folks, they have over 600 vehicles in stock right now, and their award-winning sales staff, they don't play games, and they're not about gimmicks. They're about getting straight to the point, which is all about getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Also, South Point Dodge is Austin's automotive everything. So if you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make or model vehicle, even if you don't buy it from South Point Dodge. South Point is home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price on the best new Ram truck or you're making sure you get the best deal and the best value for your old car. So folks, go visit them online today at southpointdodge.com or go visit them off I-35 in South Austin. That's South Point Dodge. So get to the point with South Point Dodge. Thank you very much for sponsoring the Winning Drive. All right, couple of more questions maybe before we get out of here, and then we'll make it final. Okay, so I don't know if this is realistic, Nick. Nick says, "With Saban and Sark have such a close relationship, do we see special assistant Saban before too long?"
Never. Unless you're paying $9 million a year.
Not gonna happen. He could be the new commissioner of college football. That's what he should do. Even if it's a symbolic role, they gonna need somebody to help spearhead this thing, or at least be kind of the figurehead of it. He can be the figurehead for that. There you go.
What do you think, Nick Saban, on the phone call, if Sark calls him and says, "Hey, man, we got a spot for you on the staff, special assistant. Come on out."
I think it goes like this. "I'm currently at the Medalist playing with Tiger Woods. I'm on hole 14. I'll call you back in a few days." Making $5 million from ESPN and spending half his time at Jupiter Beach. Like, I lived at Jupiter, not on the beach, for about 6 years.
He was just out surfing, wasn't he, Jerry? You think he's going to come spend the summer in Austin?
He's playing a PGA Tour golf schedule without actually playing the tournaments right now. So.
Yeah, same. He's enjoying he's enjoying retirement. He deserves it. He's a GOAT.
Sean's asked this about four times, so we better hit on it.
Hit it.
Yeah, I just don't see it, CJ.
I would be surprised if he's back in 2025 at this point.
I always say this, and it happened to me when I was on campus with Mac Brown, because Mac was doing great. Had won the Heisman. Well, Ricky won the Heisman his first year there in 98. And then 99, he gets the number one recruiting class. He beat Nebraska, had a lot of momentum early on in Mac's first 2 years. And then Bob Stoops comes along and wins the national title in his second year at Oklahoma. And then all of Mac's goodwill that he had built up and Longhorn fans almost vanished. And then basically the 10 wins wasn't enough. Double-digit wins wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. So I think there's also the external factors. On top of, Texas baseball fans have a really high standard for that program, higher than Longhorn football fans have their program. It's a blue blood, so they have high standards. But, man, when your rival is also doing really well and the Aggies are considered, I guess, an elite baseball program right now, if they happen to win the national title, that's going to put a lot more pressure on them. It put a lot of pressure on Mac, and I was there when that happened. Anytime. Hell, you could argue that Steve Sarkisian – taking Texas to the college football playoff put a lot of pressure on A&M, and then they decided to make a change.
100%.
This is how
those – On top of that, Rod, when you consider the other programs at the same university and seeing the success that they're having across, you know, the athletic department, whether it be volleyball, softball's yes. in the College World Series. I mean, women's basketball is tremendous. Football, obviously, in the Final Four.
Yep.
It heats up a little bit, specifically at Texas, where you expect at Texas baseball to be in Omaha. You know, yep. it is the best baseball program in the entire country. To fall flat and to do so in which you kind of you piss away a game against your biggest rival at home, where it looked like you might have been able to steal one, and then you lose a very uncompetitive game to Louisiana, a team in which you expected to beat again, it just kind of adds up and up and up, considering what we know, what's going on behind the scenes as well. It just doesn't necessarily feel like it's a perfect marriage where it was when things were going right a few years ago.
Hey, Rod, you made a great point on A&M. You know how much pressure the season winning Bama at Bama in the season Sark was having put on A&M? They fired Jimbo before the LSU game because if he happened to beat LSU, that would made it a lot more difficult to fire him. Texas A&M said, nope, we can't allow this opportunity to happen. That's how much pressure Texas season and moving into the SEC put on A&M last year. And by the way, I'm Pierce. 50 wins in 2021. It's gone to 47, to 42, and now to 36. What you said about Mac is just not going in the right direction. At the end yep. of the day, just not going in the right direction, especially headed into the most difficult baseball conference. And sports-wise, the SEC in baseball is the most difficult of any sport.
It's without a question. Yep.
Yep. And then you got the fact that Texas baseball is used to Hall of Fame coaches like Gus and then Augie, and not that Coach Pierce isn't a good coach, but they're accustomed to great Hall of Fame caliber coaches. So different standard. Good isn't good enough for certain programs. I think Texas baseball may be one of those programs. So,
Brian Orangehorn had a good point. They won all series except BYU, which is true. They won, I think, 9 series in the Big 12. They never swept any of them, so they finished 3rd in the conference. But they won a lot of series.
They did.
Sweeps to win the conference.
But I think the frustration stems even before then, right? You're winning 2 out of every 3 games in conference play, and that's great. You're finishing 3rd. You're in a good position. Then you go, what, 2-and-done in Dallas? You go 2-and – or you don't make it out of the regional. But then you look at before the preseason, and you say, oh, all right, we're playing against some pretty good teams up in Arlington again. And you come back with a goose egg in your win column again. You know, it didn't feel like Texas ever performed to the level that you would expect Texas to perform when playing the Vanderbilts, the Arkansas, the LSUs on those non-conference preseason tournaments. So in a way, season was working from behind the 8-ball before it ever actually got started in conference play. And I think that's where the frustration stems from a lot when it comes to Texas baseball is when you're at Texas, you expect to compete for trophies. You expect to compete in the national scale, and it just doesn't ever – it just didn't ever get that start on a year-to-year basis over the last 3 years or so.
Love this from Daniel Clark. He says, never seen a firing in Texas baseball in my 53 years.
That's wild.
Way before my time. It is. It's like I said, it's a history. They almost – the Pittsburgh Steelers have done this. I think Kansas basketball has done it. To have like 3 Hall of Fame caliber coaches in a row. Like, that's really hard to do. Texas baseball was attempting to do it because that's what you did with Gus and then Augie. That's a really high bar to live up to. And like I said, David Pierce is a good coach, but I think Longhorn fans are looking for it. They want great Hall of Fame.
6 coaches since 1911.
That's like the Steelers. They're like the Steelers of baseball, man, of college baseball. That's like, impressive. You know. So, yeah it is. And also, there are a lot of folks here in the chat talking about NIL. I have, even on my radio show, I have, based on some, and it was public records at the time, it was an article from Austin Business Journal, I believe, I have brought up the lack of NIL support and the lack of NIL resources for the Texas baseball program because it was there in print. And there was a story about it, how among all the varsity sports, Texas baseball had some of the lowest amounts of NIL resources when they first started. Now, that was years ago. I'm not sure where they are now. And a lot of this stuff is not public record. So I'll go talk to ask behind the scenes, hey, is Texas going to be able to compete NIL-wise once they go into the SEC? the money, listen, the resources are there. How they're using the resources, that may be the question. I mean, that may be the predicament, because they got plenty of NIL resources at Texas, man. That's
a good point.
Right. Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue at all. So, yeah, LSU bought the title last year with NIL. Yeah, I mean, they admitted it, right? They admitted, no, this is exactly what we're doing. As a matter of fact, I want to say it might have been, it wasn't Coastal Carolina, but there was a college baseball coach recently that he went on a rant about NIL and what it's doing in college baseball. You know, Texas in this day and age should be separating with the use of NIL in all of their sports. And Texas baseball also should be benefiting from that too.
Hey, Rod, we got an Oklahoma fan in here. I need to say hello. Hope you're having a good day. So where's Arch going to transfer? He can go start immediately other than Oklahoma. I mean, look, so, I mean, he Alabama has Jalen Milroe back. Ole Miss has Jackson Dart. The Georgia has Carson Beck. I mean, unless he's going to go to Oklahoma, where are you going to go and start immediately? Because he would at Oklahoma. Hope you have a good day.
There you go. CB also wants us to remember that Mike Perrin hired Pierce, not CDC. It's fair. It's a good point there. I didn't think about that. It's right, though. That's a really good point, CB. All right. Thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate all the participation, all the questions, the super chats. Thank you guys very much. Thanks to Matthew behind the scenes. Matthew always does a great job. He's a real MVP. Thank you to my man CJ. Thank you to Jerry as well. Also, thanks to our sponsor, South Point Dodge. We really appreciate all their support. We'll be back on Thursday for the winning drive on 4:15 to around 5:30-ish. Coach Shipley will be back with us as well. So for my man CJ, for Jerry, for Matthew behind the scenes, for South Point Josh, and the own Texas football family. Thank you guys for joining us, and hook 'em horns.
Hook 'em.